Our shared planet home is in the middle of a climate catastrophe, and we all have to do our part. 5 years ago, the Scottish government set strong climate targets. With conflicting and conflating crises upon crises, we've gone back to a business as usual model. Today, we call on each other to reset, to refocus, to rethink, to find ways to meet strong climate targets for our own sakes and for the sake of those yet to come, for our own sake and for the sake of those who are struggling first and foremost, who had least to do with this. So today, reset, refocus, rethink. Climate change is here.
That's the Reverend Sally Foster Fulton speaking on a story from The Scotsman by Marty McLaughlin that has the headline, After SNP's 17 years of failure on climate change, things are about to get worse. Yes, welcome. This is the latest episode of Climate Conversations. I am your host, Robert McLean. This podcast is assembled here in Shepparton in northern Victoria, Australia, on the lands of the Yorta Yorta people. Yes, the stolen lands of the Yorta Yorta people. I pay my respects to their elders, past, present and emerging. And now you'll find a link to that Marty McLaughlin story in the show notes. I'm now struggling in a pit of confusion and despair following decisions by the Federal Labor Government in Australia to advance its exploitation of gas, a fossil fuel. Join me now as we listen to the audio from a story in the Melbourne Age by Mike Foley. It has the headline, Not a single government dollar. Albanese plays down gas policy push after blowback. Albanese engages in some adventurous rhetoric to illustrate that he's not going to support fossil fuels. Despite what he says, I think he is. Here's the audio now.
Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has vowed that no federal money will flow to gas companies as a result of a policy promoting new fossil fuel projects to plug a supply shortage that has sparked a backbench revolt. Six Labor MPs in at-risk seats have spoken out against the future gas strategy spearheaded by Resources Minister Madeleine King, following warnings from the Greens and Teal Independents that they will campaign against Labor's stance on gas to win seats at the next federal election. New sources of gas are needed to bolster supply beyond 2050 from projects such as Woodside's offshore Scarborough Gasfield and the Narrabri project in New South Wales, according to the strategy, which warns that gas shortfalls will hit the eastern states by 2028 and Western Australia in 2030. The Greens have accused the government of reviving the former Morrison government's gas-led recovery policy, which sought to open new gas fields to stimulate the economy. They want fossil fuel use phased out by 2030 and oppose any government support for the gas industry. At every hurdle, Labor's comprehensively caved to pressure from fossil fuel corporations. Vote with Greens against more coal and gas for a safe climate future, Greens leader Adam Bandt said on Friday. Victorian Labor MPs who hold seats being targeted by the Greens, Josh Burns in McNamara, Jed Carney in Cooper and Dr. Michelle Ananda Raja in Higgins, have said the government should seek to switch from fossil fuels to renewable energy as swiftly as possible. They were joined in their criticism by fellow Victorian MP Kate Thwaites and Sydney MPs Jerome Laxale and Sally Situ. The strategy, released by King on Thursday, said, new sources of gas supply are needed to meet demand during the economy-wide transition to clean energy. However, Albanese said on Friday that the government would not spend public money on the gas industry under the strategy. Not a single government dollar as a result of this announcement in gas, not one, Albanese told ABC Radio. This isn't a gas-led recovery. We're not saying that at all. The Labor Environment Action Network said the strategy failed to include measures to reduce gas usage, such as incentives to switch to electric appliances, which meant its push for new supply made it appear as boosterism for the gas industry. Lean is disappointed the government is focusing so heavily on the need for new gas supply instead of managing down gas demand, the grassroots organization said in a statement. Climate Change and Energy Minister Chris Bowen said on Friday that the MPs questioning the gas strategy are not a pressure group, and argued that the government's ambition to rapidly ramp up renewables had not changed. Josh Burns said he believes the emphasis should be on renewable energy and promoting renewable energy. I agree. Guess what? So does Madeleine King, so does Anthony Albanese, so does the cabinet, Bowen said. That's why we're lifting renewable energy from 30% of our national energy market to 82% by 2030. Bowen said gas had a role to play in supplying backup power for renewables, but stressed that the government's focus was decarbonizing the economy. He announced the government had opened a tender under the government scheme to underwrite private companies to build wind and solar farms. Today's announcement of 1.4 gigawatts for Victoria, which is enough renewable energy for 700,000 homes, is a very important part of that drive towards a renewable energy future, Bowen said. Opposition energy spokesman Ted O'Brien said the gas strategy failed to deliver tangible measures to assist industry in developing new projects in the near term and claimed the policy had been dictated by ideological opposition to fossil fuels. Labour's so-called gas strategy reads more like an obituary for the sector as it kills off any chances of Labour getting any additional gas out of the ground, O'Brien said. It's disappointing to see, Resources Minister, King miss yet another opportunity to deliver a credible gas policy because she has been rolled by her ideological colleagues. Environmental groups questioned the government's announcement on Wednesday of $566 million in funding for the Commonwealth's Geoscience Australia to survey the country and its territorial waters, including for identification of mineral and gas deposits. The Wilderness Society said despite the government's support for renewables, its push for new gas projects undermined moves to curb greenhouse emissions from fossil fuels. It's an error by the Albanese government to direct resources away from the necessary energy transition, towards propping up an industry that is completely misaligned with Australia's national interest, Wilderness Society policy and strategy manager Tim Beshara said. The Morrison government tried to bail out the industry with its reprehensible gas-fired recovery, launched in response to COVID-19, and it didn't stop the industry's decline. Cut through the noise of federal politics with news, views, and expert analysis. Subscribe.
Now we have a 90-second segment from Yale Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizerwitz, and this is Climate Connections. If you go to a city park on a hot summer day, you might sit under a big shady tree to cool off. But that tree is helping you beat the heat even when you're not standing directly under it. One study found that on very hot days, greener areas of Baltimore and Washington, D.C. can be more than 15 degrees cooler than areas of those same cities with fewer trees. And research from the nonprofit American Forests has found similar patterns in cities as diverse as Las Vegas, Minneapolis, Denver, and Atlanta. One reason for this dramatic difference in temperatures is that dark-colored roads and rooftops get scorchingly hot when the sun shines down on them. Then those surfaces release the heat they've absorbed back into the surrounding air. By shading streets and buildings, trees help keep those surfaces from getting so warm. They also help cool the air around them by taking water out of the ground and releasing it through their leaves as water vapor, a process called transpiration. So shade trees are a pretty cool way to fight urban heat. And by planting them in areas with little tree cover, cities can help ensure that all residents can find relief as the climate warms. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
And here we have a story from Crikey by Bernard Keane. It has the headline, Paying to be Exploited. Labour has now fully succumbed to the fossil fuel industry. The story begins. Labour's full surrender to the fossil fuel industry has been a while in coming since it was elected in 2022, but it's now complete. The party's embrace of gas to 2050 and the myth of carbon capture makes the Albanese government indistinguishable from the Morrison government, which Labour derided for its gas-led recovery. Peter Dutton has attracted considerable criticism for his embrace of nuclear power, but at least nuclear power works and has a proven track record, albeit at extraordinary costs and with massive delays. Carbon capture, which is now central to Labour's energy policy, is also extremely expensive. It has no track record of working anywhere in the world. Labor is embracing the one technology that's even less plausible than nuclear power. In a reverse takeover, Federal Labor has now become a branch office of the rotten WA Labor Party, an outfit owned and run by the fossil fuel and extractive industries. It's climate denialist billionaires and their propaganda outlets. The gas industry, Santos, Woodside, Origin, and multinational tech dodgers like Chevron, BP, and Shell is to be given carte blanche to develop new gas fields and at taxpayer expense. You'll find that story in the show notes. On the Thursday night just gone, that was May 9, I was in Geelong at the Geelong West Town Hall for a community meeting. The meeting, attended by about 50 people, was entitled, or was promoted, More Powerful Together and Giving a Pathway for Future Generations. The meeting was called for many purposes, but primarily among them was the idea of promoting Laetitians. A media release says, despite scepticism surrounding some traditional political engagement methods, the Laetitian system is emerging to give hope to further collective action by many more in the climate action space. Critics argue that letters to politicians, who are often seen as entrenched with fossil fuel interests, may not prompt change. However, the Laetitian system redefines this narrative by transforming individual letters into a unified, powerful force, demonstrating widespread public demand for climate action. Laetitian system co-founders emphasize that a Laetitian represents not just one person's voice, but a chorus of concerned citizens across Australia, aiming to influence and pressure their local representatives. This collective approach in Geelong has catalysed significant community mobilisation, leading to a pivotal meeting planned to propel the climate conversation both in Geelong and the national level. You'll find a link for that story in the show notes. And meanwhile, we'll hear from one of the protagonists, Mick Ait, who is well known in Geelong as a climate activist and also as the host of the radio show The Sustainable Hour. Let's listen to Mick now.
Finally, we're going live. We're streaming live from Geelong West Town Hall, where the meeting, the community meeting about climate and politics is about to start. And right now there's a video being played on the big screen and people are still coming in. So it'll be probably still a few minutes before we start. So hang in there and we're about to start. So I was given the job of just trying to set the scene. What does the landscape look like? And when I say the landscape, I guess I'm mainly talking about the political landscape, but also the landscape about what we're doing in the so-called climate movement, the climate activists in Australia. Just so you know who I am and where I'm coming from, my name is Mick Ait, and I run, together with a partner, a small media company where we produce videos, we make websites, we make e-learning materials about cybersecurity and about ESG, which is a new big thing coming up in the business world. We primarily have green groups as our customers, but on the side, and the side is all the stuff over on the left, we're doing all sorts of other things pro bono. And one of the things that I've been doing the last 10 years is that I'm the so-called director of Center for Climate Safety. And Center for Climate Safety, basically when it started, was just a blog of mine. Then it turned into the place where we posted our podcast, The Sustainable Hour, that we started 10 years ago. Tony was in the first show back then and has been with me and with Colin ever since. We've done more than 500 radio shows. I'll come back to that later. So that's just a little bit, very briefly, about who I am and what I'm doing. So the landscape, I think, many of us have the feeling is getting more and more fractured and more people splitting up in different camps and getting more and more radicalized in a way in their own opinions, their own ideologies and so on. And if you think about it, that's actually a very human thing. Back in the medieval days, that's how we used to live, you know, in small castles protected from whoever wanted to attack out there. And then with the invention of the book, we started to come together more in bigger groups. We began to share ideas. And it's as if that internet that we invented just 20 years ago or so, and which was supposed to, you know, bring everyone together, has done just the opposite. It's put us all in our different camps, and we're just sitting in our silos and not communicating with the others out there. So this is my interpretation of what the landscape looks like when we talk about media and so on. When we talk about the climate movement, it's also a silo in itself, isn't it? And inside the silo, and this is a, you know, the green hills there, that's me symbolizing the climate movement. Inside the climate movement, there are different, you could say, ideologies or different things that people are passionate about and believe in. But if we look at the work, whatever they're doing in the climate movement, this is the graph that shows how much oil, gas, and coal we're using. We can't really see, apart from the little dent there at the end, which is COVID, we can't really see much effect of the climate movement's work, if we're honest. Not yet, anyway. This is the CO2 concentration in the atmosphere, and as you can see, it is very, very steadily growing and growing and growing, regardless of what the climate activists are doing out there on the streets, and also regardless of what the UN and all the politicians are doing in their parliaments and in all the halls where they're discussing this topic. It keeps going up. So that's the landscape as it looks. I remember this sculpture because that was in Copenhagen, where I was at the time, in 2014. And it's striking how that has become reality, isn't it? 10 years down the track. What was once just something that the scientists were telling us about and warning us about is actually happening. And not everyone is paying attention. Still, even today. And the climate crisis, as it looks today, sometimes comes in surprising ways. But if you notice, there's more and more examples of what it looks like when there's disruption in the food chain. When it's suddenly about that trucks can't get out to certain villages because all the roads are flooded or disappeared. Or when it's about that the farmers are saying, we lost all our crops. And we know what the consequence of that is. In the beginning it's, we can't get any more cocoa or it's 10 times more expensive. But, you know, you add some more years to this story and we begin to get the feel of where we're heading. And if you really want to know where we're heading, it's no longer future. Just go to Haiti. There was a brilliant CNN report for what's going on in Haiti. And what's happening there is, and I hope it's not one day what's going to happen here in Geelong, but it's as if Eastern Geelong and Western Geelong are two different groups. They all have guns and they're all protecting their little tribal area. So it's back to medieval days, folks. And it's happening right now. Haiti has been hit by tornado after tornado. There's 50,000, I think it's even 500,000 people who lost their homes just overnight in one of these hurricanes that hit the country there. So it's happening real time. This is just last week, or was it even this week? I think it was, where major flooding in Brazil. And that is something we used to see as this will happen in 2070 if we don't do anything. Look at the water coming up. No, it's happening now. And this, ladies and gentlemen, is the ultimate graph. It was just out today in The Guardian. It's from the EU equivalent to NASA, the scientists in the EU who sit and look at the temperatures. And what it shows is each of these red lines is 1 year. And you can see where we are now, over there, the last red line. It's going up. And it's a bit frightening if you know what the consequences are. And the scientists are frightened. So what are we doing in the climate movement? Well, there's one group or one fraction, you could say, who believe in that we have to change each of us as individuals. We need to change our behavior. So there's a lot of things going on the internet, which is telling us good advice in what we can do as individuals. We can move our money over to a better bank, or we can cycle to work instead of taking the car. And we all have an impact, and so on. So that's one of the fractions. Another fraction is more fond of, let's try to get the judges and the court system to push harder, because they could do something. And there was actually a sign off that this would work just recently. The graph over there shows the amount of court cases that's happening around the world. As we speak, there's about 200 court cases running. And as you can see on the graph, the numbers are rising. So there may be some changes there. What happened just a couple of weeks ago was that 2,000 Swiss ladies got together and said, climate change is actually, you could say, an infringement on our human rights. And so they went to the Human Rights Court. And the Human Rights Court, which is a major authority in the European context, EU, 26 countries, 27 countries, said, you're right. And established for the first time at a court at that level that a safe climate is a human right. It's our human right. So that's important because judges and environmental lawyers around the world take notice of this. And it can change how the next court cases around the world will fall out. So it's something definitely worth following. And then there's this fraction that talks about it can't be from bottom up. It's not going fast enough. And that, yes, we can push a bit with the court system, but we need to get into the core of this. We need structural change in our society. It is as serious as that. And how do we do that? Well, normally you have a government that says, well, we want our citizens to be safe, so we enact some laws that tells people what they have to do. That's what's happening during a wartime. There's rationing, there's all sorts of things happening where the government says, this is how we get through the war. So that could happen, but it's not happening. And this is where the dilemma is, in a way. It's not happening until a lot of people actually are together around that. The narrative in society is that we need to do something drastically, fast, and they understand why. So there's one big elephant in the room when we talk about climate activists, and that's politics. I've been really frustrated every time there's an election in this country. The climate movements and all the groups that I have been working with have like gone home and sat at home and waited for the election to pass and done nothing because, ooh, they didn't want us to be seen as a political group. Our work for the climate should be apolitical. We should talk to anyone. So we don't want to be seen as if we're together with one specific party. And it's a fair argument, I know. But it's absurd in a way when we know that it's in the government that these decisions are made and we need to, you know, have an influence. As climate activists, we need to have an influence on what's going on in our parliaments. So what do we do? Well, we thought when we voted for Labour, and I didn't personally last time, but a lot of people in this country voted for Labour, we thought that we had chosen a government, as Penny Wong said on election night, that will act on climate change. Long nose, were we deceived? You mentioned the gas, but look at the graphs. This is how we are going, how well we are going with selling coal and gas at the moment. And the main thing that I'm looking at here is, because this is something a government just with a stroke of a pen could change if they wanted to and if people were in agreement with it, is how much subsidies are we giving to the fossil fuel industry and how much do we give to the new transition over to renewables? And look at the figures, both in Australia and at global level. 5-6 times more money is handed out, and that's our money, taxpayers' money, is handed out to the fossil fuels instead of to the renewables. Why is that? We've had this government for 2 years and they're still doing that. This is the graph over there that shows how much coal Australia is exporting. And we are at a peak, record high. So how does the government talk about it? Arms up. The Department for Energy is saying Australian thermal coal export volumes have recovered, you know, because after the COVID, we've come back, we're selling more than ever. Yes. What? What was that about climate change you mentioned? This graph here, if you look, shows the different governments we've had. The blue, that's Liberal or coalition, and the red is Labour. And where we are now is just going up again. And if you continue that graph, and if Anthony Albanese wins the next election, he will be the most coal exporting prime minister in Australian history. But he was voted in, I thought, on climate action. So what's going on there? At the moment, we've sort of slowed down a bit. The yellow graph is what's actually happened. This is how we're cutting our emissions. But at the moment, we are not following the blue line as we were supposed to hit the 2050. We're sort of heading out there. In 200 years, we'll reach that net zero that they talk about if we continue as we're doing at the moment. That's with the current government. So that's the landscape we're talking about, just to set the scene, right? And what we don't want to happen is this. I think we all agree on that. Collapse is around the corner. And collapse starts with that people get apathetic. And they just have this feeling, oh, it doesn't matter anyway, it's too late, who cares? I think that's our biggest enemy in the room. There's a cartoonist who put it this way. And I think the two words that we should look really deeply into is the lies and the fear. Because that's what will determine the next election. And it's bad. It's really bad. There was a survey which has been mentioned a number of times here in Australia with young kids, 10 to 14 years old. One out of four of these kids say that they don't believe there will be a world when they grow up. That's how bad it is. And in America, there's a study that has shown that 4 out of 10 Americans believe we are living in the end times, whatever that is. So we need to do better. That's what I'm saying, and that's why we're here today. The big question is, how do we do it? And we'll have some inspiration to how we will do that. For instance, it could be that we would say, okay, if we're not getting what we want, maybe we need some other politicians in charge. It's certainly a discussion about what's happening in our parliament.
Next to speak was Sue Barrett, who played a key role in the establishment of Voices for Goldstein, who saw the election of Zoe Daniel to the federal parliament in the seat of Goldstein.
I don't know where you were Christmas 2019-2020, when Australia was literally going up in flames, ScoMo was in Hawaii and wouldn't hold a hose. I was lying on my couch up in the electorate of Goldstein, having an existential crisis, many existential crises I've had since my early 20s when I became aware of the climate crisis, wondering what on earth we could do. My friend Denise Chevelle from North Sydney, from the electorate of North Sydney, rang me, because we were talking to each other via Twitter, and she said, Sue, you know what? You've got to do in Goldstein, and I've got to do in North Sydney, what Cathy McGowan did in Indi, and Zali Steggall did in Warringah. And I said, sure, how do you do that? So, then COVID hit. And of course, we're all kind of occupied with that. But this never went away. And as I started to think about this more and more, and I thought about what I also do professionally, and as, you know, connections of interactions with people and all the networks that you have, Denise rang me in about November 2020 and she said, listen, there's a woman you need to speak to. They're putting some people together in Goldstein to have a chat about whether or not we could do and put up an independent candidate in the seat of Goldstein. And I said, sure. So I went and actually got on a Zoom call with about 15 or so people, most of them strangers, or all strangers to me, and some of them knew each other. There's a group called the Bayside Climate Crisis Action Group, which is down in our electorate, so a few people there. So we all got on Zoom and we talked about what the hell can we do about this? Because quite frankly, this party-powered politics isn't working for us. They work for vested interests. And some of those have just been mentioned by Nick before. I won't have to go over them. You know who I'm talking about. We want people-powered politics. Because democracy is not a spectator sport. And in a country like Australia, for many years, we've been able to sort of sit back and, you know, think about things going pretty well. But in the last 20 or so years, probably even longer tail than that, things have not been going well. Things aren't been going in our favour. And we had to do something. Now, of the 15 or so people on that Zoom call at the end of 2020, 8 of us decided that we would actually start Voices of Goldstein. So we got a website up, we got some messaging happening, and of course we had a t-shirt. And on our t-shirt we had our Independence Day is coming And we started to do some key activities that were done in Indi. And that is, we started to host kitchen table conversations. We started to get people in our community and we asked them, what's important to you? What do you want to see happen? How do you want to see politics done better? And of course, what came out as top priority was climate action, followed by integrity in politics, followed by equality for women and, you know, minorities, and mutual prosperity. We actually had all of these conversations going on, some remote, some in person. Of course, we weren't in lockdown. And we also started getting out on the streets. We had no money, but we managed to sort of pull together some things and put our t-shirts on. And we'd go and do democracy walks. And we would actually go out and speak to people. And we'd ask them, what's important to you? What do you want? And they kept telling us the same thing over and over and over again. We built up a following of about 300, 400 people. And then we asked those people, would you like to see a community independent candidate for the seat of Goldstein? And they all went yes, because it's better than what we've got at the moment. Because we got nothing done about any of the stuff that you see up here and all the other topics. So then we actually put out communique. We did our first letterbox drop across the whole electorate. So we letterbox dropped 66,000 homes with a little basic flyer that told them what we were and what we wanted to do. And we started to get people responding that they would like to be a candidate. So long story short, what happened was that we had 14 self-nominations. I became chair of the selection panel. We had a diverse range of people who actually were part of that panel so we could represent the different types of people in our electorate. And then I got a phone call in July. Actually, no, I got a tweet in July from Angela Pippos, who some of you may recall was actually an ABC, one of the founding sort of female sports journalists in this country. That was a bit of a baptism of fire for her as well. She tweeted me and I've gone, oh, she goes, can we talk? And I said, sure. So we exchanged numbers via DMs. We had a chat one Saturday morning and she said, I see what you're doing in Goldstein. I live in Goldstein. It's not for me, but I reckon my best friend Zoe Daniel would be amazing. Now, if you want to have a great candidate, you'd love a marquee candidate that a lot of people might know. So I'm on the other end of the phone with my mouth open going, oh my God. So she, Zoe and I met. I explained what we were doing and Zoe said no. And I went, oh, okay. So then I said to Zoe, you're a journalist. Maybe there's a good story in this. Do you mind if I stay in touch? So I stayed in touch. Because this is a big decision for people to take on. Okay, so it's not for the faint-hearted. And it's a baptism of fire. Anyway, in October, after several kind of staying in touch, as I let her know, look, we've really got to get our act together. We don't know when the election will be called. But do you, look, I just need to know, are you in or you're not? And she went, I'm in. And so she went through the process. And of course, as you know, the rest is history. And so, of course, I now bring my... my Zoe Daniel t-shirt. And so we started and we took all of these people, we promoted it, and we ended up with 1,500 volunteers. And as you know, we actually won. It was an incredible experience, but it doesn't happen by accident. And this is where I'd like to bring in my experience in a professional sense. I've been running my own small business now for the last 30 years. It's a specialist consulting and education firm, and it specialises in ethical, human-centred communication and sales strategies and practices. So I know how to sell something. And when she asked me, actually, when we got her to say yes, she then asked me would I be her campaign manager. I'd never done that before in my life. But when I thought about it, you know, I thought a political campaign is an on-the-ground, human-to-human sales-led campaign. It's about having conversations. Yes, you have an air campaign, you know, your marketing social media campaign, but you need an on-the-ground, human-to-human, having conversations campaign. And that's how we're going to win it, human-to-human. And that's what I made sure we ran as a campaign. And it's been just a really interesting experience, the galvanising of community, bringing people together around something that they can have agency in, that they can take action in. Now, I'm not suggesting you have to run a community-backed independent candidate for your seats here in Geelong. However, You do need to get activation around something to make sure those politicians pay attention to us. And so I'm just going to get my phone, because that gas thing that was on this morning, you know, that the Labor government actually promoted, well, Josh Burns has the seat of McNamara, and that's right next to Goldstein, and he won it by this much from the Greens, and he's a Labor politician, and he has come out against that announcement today. So this is very interesting. So if this even stays Labor, which is two Labor seats, you know, Corangamites on a, you know, it's always on a knife edge and stuff. By the way, I'm originally from Geelong, so I'm Geelong girl born and bred. But it doesn't mean to say you have to run a Zoe candidate. Yeah, sure, if you want to and you've got momentum, by all means, go for it. Run a good campaign. There's materials and stuff that we can share. I won't bore you with the details, but I've done this community independence project, and I've been able to put up, I've done some Zooms and things about how to run strategies and campaigns and stuff, so I won't bore you with the details now. But the point is, even if you don't put a candidate up, amass a bunch of people and go in their faces and tell them this is what needs to happen and force them to pay attention to you. Democracy is a team sport. It's an activated sport. You have to get out there and create momentum. Zoe then asked me, just it wasn't just Zoe's campaign, but Zoe asked me last year if I run a non-partisan, you know, coalition of people for the Yes campaign in Goldstein. And so I ran a 16-week on-the-ground campaign with 500 volunteers. So I've brought my little Yes t-shirt for that. It's obviously, you know, not the national result that we wanted. But I can tell you now that if we had not run an on-the-ground human-to-human campaign to engage people out there, it would have been a no in Goldstein. So human-to-human makes a huge difference. Where else have I applied my approach, my professional skills to these things? I don't know if any of you remember, but back on the 15th of March 2021, there was a big protest called March for Justice, where we stood up for what happened to women in Parliament House, particularly Brittany Higgins. Does everyone remember that? I'm one of the founding organisers for that. I did all this messaging, and I made sure our strategy and the website was up there. Here are some of the stats. On the 28th of February, Denise Hendry tweeted, how many people would it take to surround Parliament House, Canberra, to express our disgust at what was happening in the Parliament House? And someone came back and said, 4,000 if you held hands around it. But then someone said, you can't hold hands around Parliament House because it's actually a security risk. So we went, all right, how can we go out on the grass? How many people could we get to Canberra on the 15th of March? And the reason we chose that day was that was the first day of sitting back. We know when they were back in, it was their work day. This is a workplace issue. So that was on the 28th of February. On the 1st of March, someone tweeted, could someone build a website? And I saw that and I looked at my husband, who's an IT geek, and went, yes, we can. And so I then met with Janine on the Tuesday morning, the 2nd of March, and I said, we can build the website. I want to do the messaging that's very inclusive. I wanted to do messaging that actually is invitational. I don't want it to be divisive. And I felt like I'd spent my whole life preparing for this moment. And so we got the website up by 3:30 that afternoon. And then everything started to go. And everything started to happen. So here's what ultimately happened. We ended up with 110,000 people marching around Australia at over 200 locations across this country. 8,000 people turned up to Canberra, 15,000 in Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne, 8,000 in Adelaide, 8,000 in Perth, and then places all over the country, even very conservative places like Orange and Warwick, were having their own March for Justice, because this issue of women's violence and all that sort of stuff and all the things happening to us was just enough is enough, as you know, the hashtag. On the Saturday before the actual event, the website itself got over 800,000 hits from Australia alone, 40,000 from the US, 30,000 from Europe. This event had over 7,000 unique media impressions, all the mainstream media in this country, both radio, TV and press. We had NBC, BBC, Time magazine, you name it. We were in the major news headlines in the Western world, including also other places in Asia. On the actual Monday in Canberra, it was the most amazing experience. to be able to, there was a few of us because we had no money either. And these are in short supply, but here's my March for Justice t-shirt that we went with, that we wore. So it's only a few of them we were able to get printed. And as the posse of us were walking up to Parliament House, we had a Canberra crew organising everything. It was a beautiful bluebird sunny day, and everyone was coming out of the streets to go to Parliament House. And then people started seeing us, and they said, "Oh, are you the organisers?" And we went, "Yes." They started crying. They started hugging us. They said, "I can't thank you enough for giving us something to galvanise around, to finally say enough is enough." And this is what I'm trying to share with you. As terrible as the statistics are and the actual experiences are we're seeing out there, you are not without agency. You are not without something that you can do. But we need a clear message, we need to galvanise, and we have got capability to be able to take it right up to them. So here's the sort of finish to what I want to say. In May last year, I went up for my turn to work out of the Canberra office for Zoe. So because we don't have a lot of staff as independents, some volunteers will take turns when there's a sitting week to go up and be kind of the admin support and stuff like that. Anyway, when I was sitting on the tarmac in Melbourne Airport ready to take off for Canberra, it was about 6 o'clock in the morning, and I was reflecting, I was thinking, you know, the last time I was in Canberra was for March for Justice, and I was outside Parliament House. Now I'm going inside Parliament House with Zoe Daniel. That's what people power can do. So thank you for the opportunity for me to present this evening. Good luck to you all, and good luck for all of us. Thank you very much.
The third speaker was Jian Nell, who researches and teaches corporate law and governance. She is passionate about personal and corporate environmental stewardship. Jian is also the co-founder of Cool Geelong, a local community group that champions the preservation and growth of Greater Geelong's urban forest. Let's listen to Jian now.
We need something to galvanise. And I think that's probably the reason why I was invited to come here, because I appeared on the Sustainable Hour and said, my thing is, I am actually apolitical. I'm not into politics. But if there's one thing that we can all come together on and should, it's the earth. And that's the slide I used. And it follows wonderfully and confirms what Sue said. We need to come together about something that's important for all of us, irrespective of our political thinking or leaning. We owe it to ourselves, and we owe it to our children and next generations. Now, if I can tell you quickly where I come from. A couple of years ago, in 2020, some of my neighbors contacted me because I have a legal background and said, there's a development coming up in our area, wonderful piece of land, 65 mature, majestic trees, and they are proposing to remove them all, turn it into Mars. And we're a bit uncomfortable about that. We think you can put up housing, but you can do it in a way that would leave, that would make it livable for people who's going to live there. I'm not a planning lawyer, but I said, no, I'll give it a go and just see what I can find out. What I found out is that there is no proper protection. We have a narrative, either you build a house or you have a tree. You can't have both, which really isn't true. But anyway, so that got me really annoyed. We had a petition that said, protect our tree canopy. That petition actually, and we had 1,500 people sign it. The power of people coming together, irrespective of what we think in terms of other issues. When we think about climate, we agree. And those signatures moved at a state level decision making so that certain policies in the planning scheme in Geelong didn't happen. So we protected some green space, and that's where Cool Geelong comes from. And we talk about, we make people aware, plant trees, protect trees, because nature-based solution is an enormous part of climate change. We cannot plant our way out of the fossil fuel we are producing. It's a holistic thing, but we are a group of people and we've grown. We're about 150 people now, which sounds like not a lot, but it's actually fairly big for a Facebook group. And I think there are some of the councillors here that know we're the squeaky wheel that remind them constantly. And we actually make a difference in terms of how our environment in Geelong is managed. But what I learned, looking at state level, looking at nature-based solutions, listening to Mick, doing the Sustainable Hour, meeting up with Robert, we need climate-focused, independent, unfettered, not fettered to a political party, not fettered to a power block, focused on what is good for us, what's good for our children. We need that kind of decision making. And here's some examples. We don't. We don't have that at a local level in Geelong. We don't have that at a state level in Victoria. And we certainly don't have that at a federal decision making level. And by the way, those decisions are made by people that hails from Geelong. So it's our votes that make a difference. And that is what I'm here about. To say, yes, and I agree, Mick, it's not about individuals, but do try to recycle. Do, I beg of you, plant a tree. Think before you develop, and develop around the nature. Join a group, that's the one thing, join a group. Let's amplify each other's voices. Because if we don't speak together, we will not be heard and the politicians won't mind. Use the power that democracy gives you. Go to the town. Please come to council meetings. Ask questions. Engage. Sign up for Cool Geelong News. Write a petition. Engage. Use the power. We are so powerful. Use the vote. Make that politician at every level realize they're accountable to us. They answer to us. And we have the power to put them in or out. Just to remind you again, the earth is what we all have in common. No matter what your political narrative or belief is, we live here, all of us together. And then finally, just in the vein of amplifying each other's voices, let's be powerful together. And if you don't do it now, when? In 2207? And if you don't do it, if we don't do it, who will? And that is all from me. Thank you.
Geelong's Robert Patterson was the fellow behind Thursday night's public meeting. He is also the fellow who is driving the Letitian idea. Robert is a wonderful man who is pursuing a powerful idea, but it's with apology I note that he is not an influential and charismatic public speaker. However, let's listen to just a few words from Robert now.
Thanks for all the speakers tonight. I'd just like to acknowledge that we've kept councillors with us. We've got a member of State Parliament here, and that's what we want, that's what we're trying to engage with. So I think we might let Sarah Mansfield with us, let her have a word or two, because we're not frightened of politicians in this group. So just to come to what I was going to talk about, and I'll go through this pretty quickly, but yeah, just a special thanks to the committee and our very important supporters. We can't thank them enough. I'd just like to acknowledge the country we're on, and I think Tony's done that very well. I'd just like to also thank some people that are here, just to show you the dedication and the interest. Rob McLean, I'm sure he doesn't mind mentioning me mentioning him, but he comes from Shepparton. So, is that right? That's, yeah, Shepparton. So put your hands together. We've all got, also got somebody else in the room, two people that run Vote Climate One. Is that right? Yes. Yeah, so they've come from way up country, sort of, whereabouts, Rob? Kyneton. So fancy coming all the way from Kyneton. And he's got his wife with him, Judith, if you wouldn't mind giving her hands there. Right, well, we've got to travel quickly. I've put something up on the, and people have already voted. We've had 15 votes of people, and the questions, have you ever heard of Leticians? So we've got 73% saying yes, and we've got a few no's. So that's what we're trying to do tonight. We're trying to introduce a bit of an idea here. Just also like to thank Karina from over here on the table with Geelong Sustainability. Yeah, that's a good idea. Need a hand there. Because they are the force in Geelong, and they have started to really concentrate on climate. And Karina, she's their climate person, so that's fantastic. I was once told by a good friend when I started into this stuff, because I'm a builder actually, so what I'm doing here I'm not quite sure, but I was told by a friend when I started this work, Robert, this climate work is hard, but follow the energy. And I wasn't quite sure what he meant, but the energy is here tonight. For people that have come from that far, and from Sue to come all the way from Melbourne with a leg that's not so good. And thank you very much, Sue, that was absolutely fantastic. So I've got to keep moving quickly because I want to go through a little bit about the Letician thing. I think we've got to move outside the square. Mick's talked about the elephant in the room, and he's put up a slide there for us. And the question that we're always all asking is how. So what we've got here on the screen is we've got a group, whether it be a climate group or a local group, but there you go. He's flicked it already. That was the how, and it was very confusing. We don't get through. But what we're trying to do is get through to that guy on the right-hand side. He's our local politician. And so how do we do that? So that's what we wanted to travel with a little bit tonight. So what I'd like to do is, Mick's got up the two slides. This is just, I'm going to also change the setting so that we can vote as we go on the Slido. So we've had 18 people that have never heard, have you ever heard of a Letician? So that's done that one. So let's go to the next one. If you'd like to have a look at that one and vote on that one. So to do a Letician, let's just go to, you've all got a QR code on the table. We can do that, Mick, can we? The people can
just follow.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'll follow this one up here, all right, for a start. So what we've got here is all about, this is all about the Letician, how it works. So that's the front page. And we really should need to go on to it a minute. If we're just going to try, a few of us will probably get through and do a Letician. So if you can do the next slide, Mick. So what we're saying here is every month you can look at the Letician. The Leticians are on the table if anybody's had a look at them. And so you go there, you click on there, and that's your lattician, and you can read that's been done. And these latticians are done by some very capable people, and they're very well put together. So now if we go back, I think, is where we're heading. So then we're going to generate a lattician. So that's the form that comes up. So you fill that one in there. You can pick, let's go down, Mick, to the bottom.
And okay.
You can't. So, but those are the latticians. So there's a May lattician. The one that we're working on is climate and mental health issue, which is a very good lattician. It's been well thought through. And then you just click for your local member. There's one person who's done five latticians this afternoon, and so they can be done quickly. The whole idea of it is that they can be done by Jenna, because she's only got 6 minutes a month to look at this sort of stuff, and so she does one or two latticians, and then she can put go on with the rest of her life, but she's contributed to the process. So what have we got? Well then, once you've done a lattician, and it's sent in, the beauty about it is they're recorded, or they're counted. So that there you can see all the politicians, federal politicians, that have received latticians. So because of the latticians that were sent in Geelong, only in Geelong, and that's why we're here tonight, because that's got the energy to say, let's have a meeting, let's see if we can, you know, do something locally. So it's just a matter then of people doing a lattician, and we've been talking about it and talking about the elephant in the room, which is the climate, but we've got to get the message across to our politicians. I think if we can, I'll just go to the next one, if you'd like. There's 15 people voted on the last one. So we'll just do that one, and then there's a couple more. I think we'll just have a go at doing a lattician, because then it'll be just interesting to see if people can get around it fairly quickly. Just a bit of an idea, how many people have done a lattician? We just have a very quick hand. So the people that have done them might just help somebody else that hasn't. But now we'll go on, if you can click on that Q&R code, and you'll come up on your phones to the lattician page. So that's a very good point. Thanks, Mick, for that. So now we've got a little film that because David Pocock reached out to this meeting, and he did this video for us. It runs for 2 minutes. So let's play that now, Mick. Now, just before we do, though, just if everybody goes on to the, what you need to do is now, if you go onto your phone and see the top one there, generate your lattician, you just fill out the form. Now, the lattician doesn't go straight to your politician or anybody else. It goes to you as an email, as a PDF, and then you can send it on to your local member. So let's have a look at David while you're starting on a lattician.
As people worked on the lattician, they're able to watch and listen to a 2-minute video from Australian Capital Territory Senator David Pocock, who along with the then teenager Anjali Sharma had put together a Duty of Care Act, which is now before the Australian Senate.
Well, thanks, David Pocock. So he's reached out to us. He's impressed with what we're doing just with this meeting. So they will contact and they are approachable. In fact, I'm thinking that, you know, that maybe Zali Steggles invited me to Canberra, and I think David Pocock will be seriously thinking that the next meeting we have, we had a meeting in Melbourne Town Hall, we had one in the Geelong Library, we're having this one, maybe the next one should be in Canberra. And I've had people that have already put their hand up would join such a meeting. So how are we going, everybody with their lattician? Have we got anybody that feels they've done one so far? Have we got any hands at all, or are we going to do them later? How are you going, Tony?
Getting there.
Getting there. Well done. A lattician, you don't have to put your... Tonight we're just trying not putting your street address and your number. I mean, there's a privacy issue here too. But when you then send your PDF file letition onto your local member, then you can, you know, it'll be an email from you to him, it's not to anybody else, and then you can put your details in there. But yeah, you must give your politician your details, otherwise it's not working. But people are putting their names and their addresses in. So we've got anybody that's actually done a letition just out of interest? Because if this system reaching out to our local members is going to work, it's perhaps through this system that it takes 6 minutes a month once you've done it. As I said, there's one lady here that did 5 this afternoon. What we're trying to do, we just need the numbers to drive the system. If we don't get the numbers, the system will die, because but we are getting the numbers, but it's a slow process.
Others who spoke briefly during the evening were the host, Tony Gleason, and Jenna Wade. The meeting was set up to promote the idea of the letition, but it became obvious during conversations that there was a powerful belief in the meeting that Geelong could do with the voices of. The meeting ended on time at 7 p.m. and with the help of Robert's son Ben, I made my way back to the Geelong Railway Station, in turn to Southern Cross Station in Melbourne, then on to the Seymour Station, and finally I drove home to Shepparton. It was well worth making the trip. The letition idea is powerful and needs to be embraced on a wider basis. It's a tool that enables us to enact and enforce democracy upon those who make the decisions, our politicians. I'm going to use this episode to include a few links that talk about the climate crisis. Now, please don't forget to check out those in the show notes. Well, we've reached the end of this episode of Climate Conversations. Thanks so much for your company. It's been great to have you along. I urge you to follow this podcast, because if you do that, you'll be alerted every time I publish a new episode. Also, I'd love to hear from you. I want to know what you think about this podcast, so please contact me on r.mclean7@icloud.com. Don't hold back, good or bad, please let me know. Also, I'm keen to have your voice on this podcast, so if you've got something to say about the climate crisis, please contact me at same email address, and I can contact you via phone or over Zoom, and we can have a chat. So, until we talk again, please take care, stay safe, and please be kind. For everyone you meet is fighting a great battle. Now take care and stay safe.